Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the great conversation. I really enjoyed it.
No worries, mate. We'll see you on the other side.
All right. And in the meantime, here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
We use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
right.
11,
and most of
11,
and amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is that any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah.
Everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Monday night or Tuesday morning or Tuesday afternoon, all depending on where you reside on this beautiful blue marble, such that it still is. It's a beautiful sunny autumn day down here in Sydney. Had some pretty stellar weather as of late. Sometime soon that switch will go off that kicks into actual winter, but at the moment we're in kind of that transfer area of autumn, which is seemingly longer than normal, because usually it seems to go from, you know, like summer to winter, click, it's, what was that? Oh, that was autumn just sneaking by. but it's been absolutely stellar around here lately. Got a couple of things to talk about, and I know I've been doing a lot of stuff on Monsanto and whatnot lately, and there's more of it, and I think I read a bit of an interview with this author not too long ago, Mr. William Engdahl, who has a book out at the moment called Seeds of Destruction. And it gets into the agribusiness and genetic manipulation subject. And I'll tell you, you read this stuff, and it flows like a bloody, you know, almost like an espionage political thriller. How for decades there's been a plan to basically own everything that you and I eat. And where food has been used as a weapon in United States foreign diplomacy. And the other thing that I've got for a little bit later is this unbelievable, kind of completely surveilled system that's been built by American companies for the Chinese for the Olympics, which basically gives, you know, creates areas where every single movement of every person in the area can be moved or marked, and it just kind of sets up very, very scary possibilities for the Olympics. Because I'm getting more and more the impression that it's going to be a debacle. It's going to be a huge debacle. I think there's going to be protests. I think there's going to be ugliness. Now, how well this is controlled from actually getting out to the rest of the world, not quite sure. But, you know, Bob and I were talking about, you know, martial law in the United States, you know, end of 2008, beginning 2009, if we go into Iran. Well, I think that the very system for the future of an American police state is being, you know, tested and paid for by the Chinese government during the Olympics. And we'll talk about that in a bit. And I find this stuff, you know, you don't have to go looking hard for stories that just come up as feeling like the most out there conspiracy content. But, I mean, there are small groups of people with huge amounts of power and money that will do incredible things to maintain that wealth and that power. It's unbelievable. But before we get there, got a couple of treks for today. And this is an unofficial request for Gail, I think. She's been kind of singing this one around the house on and off all weekend long, and I don't know if it was because we were messing around in the garden or what, but Gail's been walking around singing this great song from Country Joe McDonald off the incredible live album called Living in the Future in a Plastic Dome. And I don't know why, but I figured it just, for some reason, it seems to apply to the idea of food being minimalized to technology and living in a police state future, completely surveilled, living in the future in a plastic dome. Sounds mighty strange, I agree. So, as a little bit of a setup, and I've got another track to follow that because it's kind of the antithesis too, but this one's for you, Gail, just because you've been singing this all weekend. Country Joe McDonald off the incredible live album Living in the Future in a Plastic Dome. Roll it, Bob.
I have this sort of a plot for a science fiction book which I haven't written yet, which is that things get so bad and polluted that everyone moves into geodesic domes, and inside the domes it's really nice, you know. And this is a little song about how wonderful it's going to be living inside these big domes, you know.
Cover
floods the city with plastic domes so the air inside could be clean. And it's really fine in our new home, we have everything we need. There are no planes, no buses or trains, and if you want to go somewhere, just think about where you'd like to be at, and before you know it, you're there. Living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. But now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be. Yeah. Living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. But now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be. Now if you're hungry for food or drink, just go to the teller machine. Place your order, you just have to think and look at the video screen. But if you're lonesome and you think you would like to have a friendly chat, just talk to the teller machine and the teller machine will talk back. Hey, living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. Now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be. Yeah. Living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. Now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be.
From one of the greatest live records, I reckon, ever, and it's just a guy and an acoustic guitar, but if you've never heard Incredible Live, I suggest you go and get it and listen to it from beginning to end. It's just a great performance, and Country Joe has his great little bits of banter in between, and some of it's just hysterical, and it's, you know, just post-Vietnam War, so there's a fair bit of political content in there. And so the second track that I've pulled for today is in relation to that other story we'll get to. That, you know, as we seem to be heading down the road to a possible police state, one day we'll actually be free. And I this is just a great tune. It's nice, it's happy, it's easy. It's a classic. From the same album, Incredible Live, Country Joe McDonald, Free Someday. Roll it, Bob.
Okay. This is another song about revolution, you know. Brothers and sisters, come on, join the army. We got to help each other, throw away our chains. Come on and make revolution, join the people's army. If we stand together, we'll all be free someday. We'll be free someday, yeah. Someday we'll be free someday. Know that we'll all be free someday. We'll be free someday, yeah. Free someday we'll be free someday. Know that we'll all be free someday. I can see the sun rising on a brand new morning. I can hear voices singing a victory song. I can see the people's army marching on to glory. If we stand together, you know it won't be long. We'll be free someday, yeah. Free someday, we'll be free someday. Come on, sing it. We'll be free someday. Free the sisters. Free someday. Free the brothers. Free the children. We'll all be free someday. Oh, yeah.
sisters, come on, join the army. We got to help each other, throw away our chains. Come on, make revolution, join the people's army. If we stand together, we'll all be free someday. We'll be free someday.
Love hearing the audience just singing along with them during the choruses on that great song. I think I'm going to go to the China story first. Both of these pieces that I'm going to be reading from are extensive, to say the least. And the first one is actually from Naomi Klein, who just, you know, she kicks ass. there's a post here at Rolling Stone. China's all-seeing eye. With the help of U.S. defense contractors, China is building the prototype for a high-tech police state. It's ready for export. See, just as long as you're making a buck. 30 years ago, the city of Shenzhen didn't exist. Back in those days, it was a string of small fishing villages and collectively run rice paddies. A place of rutted dirt roads and traditional temples. That was before the Communist Party chose it, thanks to its location close to Hong Kong's port, to be China's first special economic zone. One of only four areas where capitalism would be permitted on a trial basis. The theory behind the experiment was that the real China would keep its socialist soul intact while profiting from the private sector jobs and industrial development created in Shenzhen. The result was a city of pure commerce, undiluted by industrial by history or rooted culture, the crack cocaine of capitalism. It was a force so addictive to investors that the Shenzhen experiment quickly expanded, swallowing not only the surrounding Pearl River Delta, which now houses roughly 100,000 factories, but much of the rest of the country as well. Today, Shenzhen is a city of 12.4 million people, and there's a good chance that at least half of everything you own was made here. iPods, laptops, sneakers, flat-screen TVs, cell phones, jeans, maybe your desk chair, possibly your car, and almost certainly your printer. Hundreds of luxury condominiums tower over the city. Many are more than 40 stories high, topped with three-story penthouses. Newer neighborhoods like Kejiyan are packed with ostentatiously modern corporate campuses and decadent shopping malls. Rern Koolhaas, Prada's favorite architect, is building a stock exchange in Shenzhen that looks like it floats. A design, intended, he says, to suggest and illustrate the processes of the market. A still-under-construction superlight subway will soon connect it all at high speed. Every car has multiple TV screens broadcasting over a Wi-Fi network. At night, the entire city lights up like a pimped-out Hummer, with each five-story hotel and office tower competing over who can put on the best light show. Many of the big American players have set up shop in Shenzhen, but they look singularly unimpressive next to their Chinese competitors. The research complex for China's telecom giant, Huawei, for instance, is so large that it has its own highway exit, while its workers ride home on their own bus line. pressed up against Shenzhen's disco shopping centers, Walmart superstores, of which there are nine in the city, look like dreary corner stores. China almost seems to be mocking us. You call that a superstore? McDonald's and KFC appear every few blocks, but they seem almost retro next to the real kung fu fast food chain whose mascot is a stylized Bruce Lee. American commentators like CNN's Jack Cafferty dismissed the Chinese as the same bunch of goons and thugs they've been for the last 50 years. But nobody told the people of Shenzhen, who are busily putting on a 24-hour-a-day show called America, a pirated version of the original, only with flashier design, higher profits, and less complaining. This has not happened by accident. China Today, epitomized by Shenzhen's transition from mud to megacity in 30 years, represents a new way to organize society, sometimes called market Stalinism. It is a potent hybrid of the most powerful political tools of authoritarian communism, central planning, merciless repression, constant surveillance, harnessed to advance the goals of global capitalism. Jeez. Kind of creepy when it's all put in that kind of context. And she continues on. She says, now as China prepares to showcase its economic advances during the upcoming Olympics in Beijing, Shenzhen is once again serving as a laboratory, a testing ground for the next phase in its vast social experiment. Over the past 2 years, some 200,000 surveillance cameras have been installed throughout the city, many on public spaces disguised as lampposts. The closed-circuit TV cameras will soon be connected to a single nationwide network, an all-seeing system that will be capable of tracking and identifying anyone who comes within its range, a project driven in part by U.S. technology and investment. Over the next 3 years, Chinese security executives predict they will install as many as 2 million CCTVs in Shenzhen, which would make it the most watched city in the world. Security crazy London boasts only 500,000 surveillance cameras. The security cameras are just one part of a much broader high-tech surveillance and censorship program known in China as Golden Shield. Golden Shield. The end goal is to use the latest people-tracking technology, thoughtfully supplied by American giants like IBM, Honeywell, and General Electric, to create an airtight consumer cocoon, a place where Visa cards, Adidas sneakers, China mobile cell phones, McDonald's, Happy Meals, Tsingtao beer, and UPS delivery, to name just a few of the official sponsors of the Beijing Olympics, can be enjoyed under the unblinking eye of the state without the threat of democracy breaking out. With political unrest in the rise across China, the government hopes to use the surveillance shield to identify and counteract this dissent before it explodes into a mass movement like the one that grabbed the world's attention in Tiananmen Square. So, they're pretty, cut and dry about the fact that this is all about trying to quell any dissent before it is even able to get a spark. She continues on, remember how we've always been told that free markets and free people go hand in hand? That was a lie. It turns out that the most efficient delivery system for capitalism is actually a communist-style police state, fortressed with American homeland security technologies pumped up with war on terror rhetoric. And the global corporations currently earning super profits from the social experiments are unlikely to be content if the lucrative new market remains confined to cities such as Shenzhen. Like everything else assembled in China with American parts, Police State 2.0 is ready for export to a neighborhood near you. Blah. Zhang Yi points to an empty bracket on the dashboard of his black Honda. It used to hold my GPS, but I leave it at home now, he says. It's the crime. They are too easy to steal, he quickly adds. Since the surveillance cameras came in, we have seen a very dramatic decrease in crime in Shenzhen. After driving for an hour past hundreds of factory gates and industrial parks, we pull up to a salmon-colored building that the Zhang partly owns. This is the headquarters of FSAN CCTV system, a prototypical Shenzhen yuppie in a royal blue button-down shirt and black-rimmed glasses apologizes for the mess. Inside, every inch of space is lined with cardboard boxes filled with electronic parts and finished products. Zhang opened the factory 2.5 years ago, and his investment has already paid off tenfold. That kind of growth isn't unusual in the field he has chosen. Zhang's factory makes digital surveillance cameras, turning out 400,000 a year. Half the cameras are shipped overseas, destined to peer from building ledges in London, Manhattan, and Dubai as part of the global boom in homeland security. The other half stays in China. Many right here in Shenzhen and in the neighboring Guangzhou, another megacity of 12 million people, China's market for surveillance cameras enjoyed revenues of $4.1 billion last year, a jump of 24% from 2006. Now, they, a little further down, they get talking about the fact that this idea of all the ancient connected cameras were also utilized by the Chinese police. You know, when the uprisings occurred in Tibet not too long ago, the police utilized this network of cameras to be able to isolate the most damning footage of the monks. Now, you know, some would say, oh, they're just using the technology at their disposal to, you know, locate those who committed, you know, horrible acts. For some reason, I kind of doubt it. I think it's more been used to stitch people up. In the war of propaganda. Let's see. I mean, this is like intense stuff. I mean, we're talking about real push for facial recognition software that can identify virtually anyone. They say here, but the cameras that Zhang manufactures are only part of the massive experiment in population control that's underway here. The big picture, Zhang tells me, in his office at the factory is integration. That means linking cameras with other forms of surveillance, the internet, phones, facial recognition software, and GPS monitoring. This is how this golden shield will work. Chinese citizens will be watched around the clock through network CCTV cameras and remote monitoring of computers. They will be listened to on their phone calls, monitored by digital voice recognition technologies. Their internet access will be aggressively limited through the country's notorious system of online controls known as the Great Firewall. Their movements will be tracked through national ID cards with scannable computer chips and photos that are instantly uploaded to police databases and linked to their holders' personal data. This is the most important element of all, linking all these tools together in a massive searchable database of names, photos, residency information, work history, and biometric data. When Golden Shield is finished, there will be a photo in those databases for every person in China. 1.3 billion faces. Holy crap. Shenzhen is the place where the Shield has received the most extensive fortifications, the place where all the spy toys are being hooked together and tested to see what they can do. The central government eventually wants to have city-by-city surveillance so they could just sit and monitor one city and its surveillance system as a whole, Zhang says. It's all part of the bigger project, one that tests once the tests are all done and it's proven, they will be spreading from the big province to the cities, even to the rural farmland. In fact, the rollout of the high-tech shield is already well underway. When the Tibetan capital of Lhasa was set alight in March, the world caught a glimpse of the rain. Of the rage that lies just under the surface in many parts of China. And this rage that Naomi speaks of is why I expect the Beijing Olympics to be a complete and utter fiasco. I think that there's way too much brewing. And unfortunately, I think it's going to manifest itself in some fairly ugly, if not violent, confrontations. And though the Lhasa riots stood out for their ethnic focus and their intensity, protests across China are often shockingly militant. In July 2006, workers at a factory near Shenzhen expressed their displeasure over paltry pay by overturning cars, smashing computers, and opening fire hydrants. In March of last year, when bus fares went up in the rural town of Junshan, 20,000 people took to the streets and 5 police vehicles were torched. Indeed, China has seen levels of political unrest in recent years unknown since 1989. The year student protests were crushed with tanks in Tiananmen Square. In 2005, by the government's own measure, there were at least 87,000 mass incidents, government speak for large-scale protests or riots. This increased unrest, a process aided by access to cell phones and the Internet, represents more than a security problem for the leaders in Beijing. It threatens their whole model of command and control capitalism. China's rapid economic growth has relied on the ability of its rulers to raise villages and move mountains to make way for the latest factory towns and shopping malls. If the people living on those mountains use blogs and text messaging to launch a mountain people's rights uprising with each new project, if they link up with similar uprisings in other parts of the country, China's dizzying expansion could grind to a halt. At the same time, the success of China's ravenous development creates its own challenges. Every rural village that is successfully raised to make way for a new project creates more displaced people who join the ranks of the roughly 130 million migrants roving the country looking for work. By 2025, it's projected that this floating population will swell to more than 350 million. Many will end up in cities like Shenzhen, which is already home to 7 million migrant laborers. But while China's cities need these displaced laborers to work in factories and on construction sites, they are unwilling to offer them the same benefits as permanent residents, highly subsidized education and health care, as well as other public services. While migrants can live for decades in big cities like Shenzhen and Guangzhou, the residency remains fixed to the rural community where they were born, a fact encoded into their national ID cards. As one migrant in Guangzhou put to me, the local people want to make money from migrant workers, but they don't want to give them rights. But why are the local people so rich? Because of the migrant workers. This starting to sound, you seeing some parallels to the United States, you know, in kind of shades. You know, migrant workers taking advantage of migrant workers. but I mean, this idea that entire communities, you know, I mean, we've seen this before, like in Olympics past. That, you know, in the Olympic Village, you know, you can't be seen on camera without, you know, officially sanctioned food. So, I mean, this is like dream world to the corporatists of this world. You know, they just look at this and go, oh, yeah! Keep them completely contained, control everything that they see and hear. Make sure that they can't make a move without being surveilled. And have them work for, you know, ridiculous hours for shit pay so that they can buy the very crap products that they're making. Here we get into where we get into where Golden Shield actually has been utilized. The answer is Golden Shield. With its militant protests and mobile population, China confronts a fundamental challenge. How can it maintain a system based on two dramatically unequal categories of people? The winners, who get their condos and cars, and the losers, who do the heavy labor and are denied those benefits. More urgently, how can it do this when information technology threatens to link the losers together into a movement so large it could easily overwhelm the country's elites? The answer is Golden Shield. When Tibet erupted in protests recently, the surveillance system was thrown into its first live test. With every supposedly liberating tool of the information age, cell phones, satellite television, the Internet, transformed into a method of repression and control. As soon as the protests gathered steam, China reinforced its great firewall, blocking its citizens from accessing dozens of foreign news outlets. In some parts of Tibet, Internet access was shut down altogether. Many people trying to phone friends and family found that their calls were shut down altogether. Many people trying to phone friends and family found that their calls were blocked. And cell phones in Lhasa were blitzed with text messages from police. Severely battle any creation or any spreading of rumors that would upset or frighten people or cause social disorder or illegal criminal behavior that could damage social stability. Boy, that's a run-on sentence. During the first week of protests, foreign journalists who tried to get into Tibet were systematically turned back, but that didn't mean that there were no cameras inside the besieged areas. Since early last year, activists in Lhasa have been reporting on the proliferation of black domed cameras that look like street lights, just like the ones I saw coming off the assembly line in Shenzhen. Tibetan monks complain that cameras activated by motion sensors have invaded the monasteries and prayer rooms. During the Lhasa riots, police on the scene augmented the footage from the CCTVs with their own video cameras, choosing to film rather than stop the violence, which left 19 dead. The police then quickly cut together the surveillance shots that made the Tibetans look most vicious, beating Chinese bystanders, torching shops, ripping metal sheeting off banks, and created a kind of copumentary, Tibetans Gone Wild. These weren't celestial beings in flowing robes the Beastie Boys and Richard Gere had told us about. They were angry young men, wielding sticks and long knives. They looked ugly, brutal, tribal. On Chinese state TV, this footage played around the clock. So, you know, anyone who says that, you know, these technologies are being used to keep you safe is so full of it. It's being utilized to keep you at bay. You know, this is the kind of technology that, you know, just the irony of the fact that I can see this technology coming to the United States before long. But yet we were able to test market it and test out the whole system really cheaply over in China. In fact, they paid us to do it. And there's huge incentives for these technology companies. Further down in this piece, Naomi talks to this guy and he says, look, whoever gets this stuff mastered first, kind of like, you know, they're a made guy. There ain't nothing stopping them. They've got guaranteed contracts. And, you know, Cobwebs in the chat room says, you know, sounds like China has one up on Big Brother. Well, is it really just China? You know, I mean, at the moment, London is the most surveilled city on the planet with 500,000 CCTV cameras. And if this is all, you know, like American technology, hardware, then being utilized for all of this, IBM, Honeywell, these companies are supporting are helping to develop this Big Brother technology. I mean, we really have gone there, and we're going to end up having the police state advertise to us on international television. See, look, there's no riots and there's no protests because technology is keeping the terrorists at bay. You know, it's an amazing mix of terminology and doublespeak. You know, first turn regular citizens into terrorists, then take all this surveillance stuff and wrap it into an anti-terror bubble wrap. And there's the cell. There's the cell. So, you know, Bob and I were talking in the horn section, you know, if the United States did go into Iran, Bob reckons, and I think he's got good reason to think this, that the United States, the citizenry, will just kind of sit there and take it and just wait it out. People won't actually take to the streets and protest. And I think he's right, but he's also right that the usual suspects will get out into the street and make noise. And, you know, another one of these bits of technology that China has also bought from the United States is that, is, you know, that sonic weapon, you know. We'll put voices in your head from long range. This is all dry run for the American police state. I know it just sounds completely over the top, but it's not. It's not. Civil rights have been disappearing for years. You know, over the last couple of decades, we've seen more and more incidents of the U.S. military actually used on American citizens on American soil, which, as far as I know, is actually still technically illegal. There's a jurisdiction issue there. But we've seen this. You know, you don't have to go looking down YouTube for too long without finding, you know, non-police, paramilitary, non-badged officers of some sort running the show. And Bob here, of course, always clearing me up. The Posse Comitatus Act, which prevents the use of the American military on American soil. But have we been seen, have we seen any signs of that actually being applied? No. Very quietly. You know, they'll use the military in drug busts and things like that as well. Where, you know, what, where's the jurisdiction? You know, and we know all the stories about the huge prisons that have been built all over the United States for special projects, internal projects. So, you know, when I hear the guy on the street corner kind of screaming and talking at great length about the police state, I don't tend to write them off all that quickly, because I happen to think that there's something to it. You know, we live in a world where we've even turned the court system into a corporatist device. You know, the stories about all the different farmers that have had their crops, you know, infected by genetically modified crop, you know, pollens. And suddenly these people who didn't do anything are the perpetrators and the huge company is the victim. I mean, you know, we see this stuff kind of all the time. It's all these little itty-bitty things. Oh, but, you know, you weren't using that particular civil right right now, were you? Not at this very, you know. I think it is a real possibility. And I only hope that we see people in public pushing for a real change in government direction that makes them think twice, that keeps them from, you know, saying, well, you know, the people might not go for this. It would be the first time that they actually respected what the people desired or cared for or wanted, but, you know, this is the first time for everything. But I just don't... This is the very reason why people should be in the streets. You know, if for no, you know, I mean, we've got all this stuff about, you know, the war and, but our basic freedoms, you know, I'm not talking about this crap that the right wing says about, you know, Al-Qaeda. They hate us for our freedoms. No. I'm talking about the systematic, You know, shredding of the U.S. Constitution. Posse Comitatus being suspended by George W. Bush. You know, it never got anywhere, but here in this country, before we had the change of government, the treasurer actually wanted to make it a terrorism offense to call for a boycott of any product. So, I mean, this new police state fascism is coming in a very, very uniquely American flavor. And it just is so appropriate that we're testing it in China, because that's where we build everything else. We don't make anything anymore. We have them build it for us. And it's all about furthering the idea that we're not people, we're not human beings, we're consumers. We're not even good enough to be workers anymore. We're nothing but consumers. And I mean, you think about this Shenzhen province, you know, 200,000 cameras. 200,000 cameras. So this means that, you know, the poor worker who's filmed at his company dorm is filmed going from that dorm to his company bus, who takes him to his company factory, to where he's surveilled, doing everything. It really is the capitalists' nirvana. You have no rights, you must consume, you must work, and stay poor and be happy about it. And you will not act up. You will not speak out. We can't have that, because that just won't do now. Because that'll undo the whole facade of everything. It's incredible. It's incredible. Here we go. Just a little bit more from this Naomi Klein article. Police State 2.0 might not look good from the outside, but on the inside, it appears to have passed the first major test. In Guangzhou, an hour and a half by train from Shenzhen, Yao Rogang is preparing for a major test of his own. It's called the 10 million faces test, he tells me. Yao is managing director for Pixel Solutions, a Chinese company that specializes in producing the new high-tech national ID cards, as well as selling facial recognition software to businesses and government agencies. The test, the first phase of which is only weeks away, is being staged by the Ministry of Public Security in Beijing. The idea is to measure the effectiveness of face recognition software in identifying police suspects. Participants will be given a series of photos taken in a variety of situations. The task will be to match the images to other photos of the same people in the government's massive database. Several biometrics companies, including Yao's, have been invited to compete. We have to be able to match a face in a 10 million database in 1 second, Yao tells me. We are preparing for that now. The companies that score well will be the first in line for lucrative government contracts to integrate face recognition software into Golden Shield, using it to check for ID fraud and to discover the identities of suspects caught on surveillance cameras. Yao says the technology is almost there. It will happen next year. When I meet Yao at his corporate headquarters, he is feeling confident about how his company will perform in the test. His secret weapon is that he will be using facial recognition software purchased from L1 Identity Solutions, a major U.S. defense contractor that produces passports and biometric security systems for the U.S. government. Hello? Hello? Country, beacon of freedom, hello? Hello? Don't you see anything wrong with this? Of course not, because it's the American way. We're making money. It doesn't matter whose death, whose rights we tramp on, as long as we're making money. To show how well it works, Yao demonstrates on himself. Using a camera attached to his laptop, he snaps a picture of his own face. round and boyish for his 54 years. Then he uploads it onto the company's proprietary website, built with L1 software. With the cursor, he marks his own eyes with two green plus signs, helping the system to measure the distance between his features, a distinctive aspect of our faces that does not change with disguises or even surgery. The first step is to capture the image, Yao explains. Next is finding the face. He presses apply, telling the program to match the new face with photos of the same person in the company's database of 600,000 faces. Instantly, multiple photos of Yao appear, including one taken 19 years earlier, proof that the technology can find a face even when the face has changed significantly with time. It took 1.1 milliseconds. 1.1 milliseconds. Say here, in nearby cubicles, teams of Yao's programmers and engineers take each other's pictures, mark their eyes with green plus signs, and test the speed of their search engines. Everyone is preparing for the test, Yao explains. If we pass, we come out number one. We are guaranteed a market in China. Is this just like so much being a good German? You know, to use that term? People are being oppressed. There's no freedom. But I can make a whole lot of money in helping them continue to do that. So I'm going to do it, because if I do that, we'll come in first. I mean, there really is, there's nothing that can't be bought. Is there anything that can't be bought? Just incredible. This piece just goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. It's just unbelievable. You know, all the stuff that we see on all these fancy schmancy cop shows and whatnot, you know, facial recognition software, that's what this is. That's what, you know, I mean... How easy is it going to be to stitch somebody up with this? How easy is it going to be to stitch somebody up? That's my first thought, you know. If you're a protester or, you know, someone who's got an opinion on a particular issue, how easy will it be to stitch somebody up, to be able to get rid of political opponents? This is what I reckon is going to end up happening. You know, I don't see, you know, this is more of this opposite world Orwellian sales job that we get, you know. Cleaner skies initiative, you know, more pollution. Homeland security, we're more insecure. This idea of, you know, we're fighting terrorism. And that little term has been just so unbelievably abused over the last 8 years. And, you know, the fudging, you know, everything we don't like is a terrorist now. It, you know, I'm like of two brains at the moment. You know, I was talking to Bob earlier that, you know, I look kind of how the Democrats are kind of starting to get their, trying to get their house in order and stop beating up on each other and start going after McCain and, you know, the positive signs from the Obama campaign as far as, you know, the mailing list and the donor list and the volunteer list and all that. But then there's the other side of it. This if we go into Iran thing, which is still such a distinct possibility, and I'm so afraid that they're going to end up pulling the sell job on us while we're not paying attention. Or while we're not paying attention, they're not even going to bother with a sell job. They're just going to do it. By executive order, they're going to do it. And then, do they actually suspend elections? Will they actually go that far? I can see them trying. But could that possibly be the straw that breaks the camel's back, finally, at least with Congress? You know, starting to hear more signs of spying. You know, John Conyers, you know, has been talking about, you know, look, Rove doesn't want to respond to the subpoena. We'll go and arrest him. It's what we have to do. It's our duty to do. You know, where the spine was 6 months ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, I don't know, but is it just because Bush is so near the end that finally, you know, got people poking their head up going, yeah, but I've been here all along. I've been saying the right thing all along. You just couldn't hear me. It's going to be a really, really wild year. There's just so much going on, and there's only so much that we that any one of us can pay attention to. Are we going to, you know... What are we gonna see take place that we've had effect on, and what is going to be done without our involvement? And I do worry about this whole Iran thing, because I just keep seeing more of Joe Lieberman, and anytime I see more of Joe Lieberman, I worry. I worry because Joe Lieberman worries me. He's a scary guy. And you know, keep talking about going into Iran. You know, if we weren't in this mess, if we hadn't been so stupid to get into this whole Iraq just debacle, you know what? Our troops could actually be available for some humanitarian stuff that's going on at the moment, right? We have the issue of the cyclone in Myanmar, which known to some of us as Burma. And I'd love to get an explanation as to why certain countries still refer to it as Burma and others refer to it as Myanmar or whatever, because it seems like the UK and the United States still refer to it as Burma, and is it because we don't recognize the current government? Not quite sure, but you know, we've got issues there. We've got issues in Zimbabwe where we could actually be doing something to help with people's quality of life and, like, actually doing something about supporting democracy. But because we've got all our focus over in the Middle East trying to keep control over the flow of oil and also trying to cover up our own dealings with Saddam and all that kind of nonsense, we don't have the bodies to actually send on real humanitarian missions. And that's really sad, because we could be doing some real good out there at the moment, but no, we can't. Because our military is broken in the Middle East. Just shocking. What a ramble fest this has been today. I didn't even get to the other article. Just seemed like too much to dump in one show. And I mean, these are huge subjects, and this is all kind of stuff that goes on without us really knowing. If it weren't for, you know, people like Naomi Klein actually going out and covering some of this stuff, this would all just happen. And, you know, a peaceful Olympics would go by, and we'd think that it was just because the Chinese did such a great job. No. They used American-developed oppressive technology to do that job. And I think we need to always remember that. But anyway, folks, thanks for being with us today. It's been a bit of a ramble fest. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing today. Thanks to Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for the streaming and the archives.